previously on Getting the Mecha.
It actually gave me a sense of curiosity. It gave me a reason to stay onto this series because I want to know, as someone who previously watched Naruto Shippuden, what the heck is Sheen? And that really gives me hope that this series actually benefits the legacy fans and doesn't just write a new slate. It's quite nice that we get an incentive to watch that is based on the legacy element as opposed to this just being a new story completely.
You are listening to the 14th episode of the Get in the Mecha podcast. I'm your host Jamal today, as usual. I like anime, I like comics, I like all those things in between, so I decided to make a show where I make sense of all of it. In today's episode, we are talking the Sheen arc, or formerly known as the Sarada Uchiha arc, as a part of the Boruto Naruto Next Generation series. Boruto has taken some interesting choices in terms of its anime in comparison to its manga, and one of those things was including the Naruto Gaiden content within the anime. And with that being said, I think it's right that I analyze the Sheen arc, or the Sarada arc, as it was involved within this part of the show. The Sheen arc takes place relatively early, so we'll be talking about what this does for the rest of the show, how it was that the character Sheen was used and developed within the space of which he was within the show, and finally, how successful overall, in my opinion, was the Sheen arc. If you do get value from today's episode, or if you did enjoy today's episode, consider leaving a review and also subscribing on your podcast app. It helps me a ton, and you can get these exactly when they come out. Without further ado, here is the episode for this week. That is episode 14 of Get in the Mecha. Just to get this started, I might as well just say spoilers for Naruto Gaiden, the manga of which the Sheen arc or Sarada arc is within, and also the Sheen arc or Sarada arc within the Boruto anime. But to kick this off, let's just put the Sarada arc into context. The Sheen arc is probably the second biggest arc in the show so far, alongside the versus Momoshiki arc, which we'll probably go into next time I talk about Boruto. And although the relevance of the Sheen arc is relatively unknown at the moment, as we haven't really seen many further developments, I think it is quite important. I'll quickly say why. I think the Sheen arc is important because it plants a seed. It introduces something that we didn't know was really possible. The presence of Sheen should be something that's unseen or absolutely mind-blowing, to be fair. It's something that just shouldn't happen, so introducing that to us is quite a big deal, and that's why I put it as second important. Evidently, the versus Momoshiki arc has a bit more relevance to Naruto Shippuden alongside Boruto. It kind of bridges the two together. The Sheen arc, that isn't really known. We don't really know what the Sheen arc will do for the rest of the show. In fact, it could even just be a one-off or something that relates to the endgame of Naruto, or Boruto and the sort of Naruto-Boruto-verse, if you will. The Sheen arc also has our three main characters, so being Naruto, Sasuke, and Sakura, the three main legacy characters, if you will, coming back for this arc, which I find really special. The old Team 7 finally has a role to play together, because it is a concept that was left in Naruto Shippuden and is now coming into Boruto, so who is better to come back and solve that problem than the old Team 7? And on that note, let's go to a plot summary of the Sheen arc. Ever since the Fourth Great Ninja War, as we know, Sasuke has been kind of on a bit of a redemption arc, trying to sort of fill up the space of which he left after the war. As a result, he's kind of a night watchman or the man in the shadows when it comes to Konoha, seeking out potential threats to the village. After returning on what seemed to be quite a bog-standard mission, Sasuke comes across a boy. But this is no ordinary boy. This is a boy with the eye of the Uchiha, the Sharingan. After what seemed to be a brief encounter, that seems to have ended, and obviously Sasuke, being the strong person he is, wins the fight. But what if I was to tell you that there was more to this fight, and what if it wasn't really even a fight? It was a time of discovery for this being. This being being Shin Uchiha. Shin Uchiha possesses what is known as the Sharingan, the Eye of the Uchiha, an eye that we only thought Sasuke possessed. And now, we fast forward to a battle between Team 7 and Shin Uchiha, in a battle of discovery and confusion. Meanwhile, a member of the new Team 7, that is Sarada, has kind of become slightly lost in everything when it comes to not really knowing who her dad is, or have never really met before. As a result, she also goes on a journey for discovery alongside Naruto to finally find her dad for the first time. And now both sides seem to be kind of confused. One side confused about whether the Sharingan is still out there besides within Sasuke, and the other side looking for someone that is supposed to be responsible for her. I think that overall kind of summarizes the Shin arc. I think there is quite a lot going on when it comes to discovery. I think discovery is probably one of the main themes out there, because the audience, for one, is discovering how much Sasuke means to Sarada. Sarada is discovering who her father is, and everybody is finding out why the heck is Shin a thing. That is probably, in summary, why I think the Shin arc is quite great. It's discovering this new concept, or bringing back an old concept and refreshing it, bringing back not only the Sharingan, but even the Akatsuki and the Taka. All of those themes kind of get dug up, and it feels like a great amount of fan service for the people that love the show. One of the main things I think that I should address that I think is very, very cool is Shin and why I decided to call it the Shin arc. The reason why I'm calling it the Shin arc is mostly because although Shin is no main character to the show and we haven't really seen him reappear many times, he's kind of a one-off at the moment, but it's the fact that Shin in itself contains so much meaning, and meaning as a character, and also meaning as a message. What message does Shin have for the rest of the show? One of the places of which I started to kind of flesh this out was I looked at the meaning of the word Shin, and what does Shin mean? According to the lovely thing that is the internet, Shin means a variety of things depending on the kanji that one's using. One of the main ways of defining Shin in kanji is new, and also heart. But then I started to look further into this, and I found that there were even more meanings. Two that I found really, really good were progress and extend. I'll tell you a bit more about those. So the reason why I think progress and extend are really, really key are because of the fact that Shin, as we know, can't be true or can't be a flat-out human. He seems to be a being that has been almost synthesized, or an invention, if you will. Something that hasn't come simply out of a mother's womb or some way natural. So having the idea of heart implies that, but to define sort of progress and extend, that is because that implies, if we're to read deep into this, although it may not be the true thing, if we are to read deep into this, that implies that Shin goes beyond having the Sharingan or just being a normal person. Although yes, you can argue that shinobi go beyond the quote-unquote average person, so if we are relative to here versus the shinobi world or the Narutoverse, they evidently are a lot more than us in terms of their abilities. But I think Shin having the term extend implies that he goes beyond the people within the shinobi world, as he is somewhat artificial and can extend beyond what the shinobi and ninjas can do. Progress also implies that he's kind of a part of something more. He's going beyond, he's a step higher in the evolutionary chain. Maybe I am reading too deep into it, but that kind of made things a lot cooler for me when I researched that. Because maybe, just maybe, Kishimoto meant for that to be explored. Someone that goes further above and beyond. And recently, Kishimoto's even been exploring that within his own writing. If we take Samurai 8, for example, that is kind of about going above and beyond the average samurai. So maybe that has something to do with that, I'm not too sure, but I'm really happy I researched that. So back to Sheen, and what does Sheen mean for the rest of the show? I covered this a bit in episode 5, I think it was. Or whenever I spoke about Boruto, I think that was episode 4 actually, Boruto at 100. I definitely recommend that one. I spoke a bit about how Sheen is a bit of a shock, and I stand by that 100%. The shock factor which comes with Sheen is probably the main reason why this very arc is very successful, alongside the theme of discovery, which I previously mentioned. It's the fact that Sheen shouldn't exist. Having another Uchiha shouldn't be a thing. But just to make that worse, it's the fact that there are 100 or more thousands of Sheen beings, those garlic-headed beings, are still here or exist. That, I think, is the success of the storytelling when it comes to this element. I think that's one of the best ways to do it anyway. Similarly to when a character dies in Game of Thrones, I don't watch Game of Thrones, but those that do will probably understand, there's kind of this looming thought of what if they come back? I think Kishimoto taps right into that, but escalates it a lot more. Rather than, you know, what if Madara comes back to life, or what if Obito comes back to life, that kind of means something, but it doesn't mean everything. What if we just introduce something completely new, and just bulk it up loads and loads, by introducing thousands of people with the Uchiha, or thousands of people with the Sharingan? The second bit, I think, when we're talking about Sheen and how he's really important to this arc, is how he is really woke about the stuff prior to Boruto. So the fact that he understands that Sasuke killed Itachi, or how he knows about the Akatsuki and their existence, also really makes me quite scared. The reason why I say that is probably for two reasons. One of them is, if we're referring to the Akatsuki, the impact or the strength of which the Akatsuki had within Naruto Shippuden. We know the Akatsuki had put up a massive fight within that show, maybe not reaching the endgame specifically, but had a massive impact, especially if we take the Pain Assault arc, and all those times where they tried to take down Naruto and the rest of the Biju holders, or the Jinchuriki if you will, they were quite brutal. But more specifically, it's more the message that comes with the Sharingan, and Itachi even, it's how he has a motive. He simply doesn't want to just destroy the world. Where he doesn't have just the simple goal of maybe destroying the world, or even something as ambitious as creating an infinite Tsukuyomi, whatever. He doesn't have any of that. He just simply goes on the back that he killed Itachi. What is the fixation between Itachi and Sheen? That is a question that needs to be answered. I'm not really a person for theory craft, so I'm not going to dive too into that. But I do think that that message is quite important. Having a motive or some sort of like ideological lens to see things through. The fact that Sasuke killed Itachi, he deems it as bad. Why does he deem it as bad? Why doesn't he deem Itachi tormenting Sasuke for how many years of his life as bad? Those questions, again, are ones that I can't particularly answer, and I don't think many of us can answer as of yet. However, it will be really interesting to see how that all unfolds. A final point which I literally just thought of was, how strong really is Sheen? That is a question that I think expands over every single battle shonen within the genre. You constantly question how strong a character is. And therefore, I put forward the question, how strong is Sheen Uchiha? We know he has multiple Sharingan, some Sharingan that don't look particularly recognizable. How strong truly is this character, and how strong of a threat can he put up? If he's someone that obviously knows the stuff to do with Naruto Shippuden and has some sort of ways to dabble within the Akatsuki, why does that seem to be a thing? We don't know. Also, I know I'm coming up with like loads of extra points now. Why is such a character like Sheen holding on to the past? As we know, he's been bringing up things like Itachi, which are kind of done and dusted now. Also the Akatsuki, which was ages ago. Bringing back old contacts and bringing back old plot points and bringing them into the new is a very big theme in this arc. And that is another reason why I think it's so good. It is a fan pleaser, I'll be honest. It does please the people that love Naruto Shippuden, including me. As well as the choice to bring in the old Team 7, which is also part of the legacy aspect, Sheen is an embodiment of the old within the new. Why is that? As I've said like 50 times, I do not know, but I'm very excited to see that unfold. Now, after all of that, and I will be doing a bit of a fight analysis for Sakura versus Sheen coming up next, but before that, let's go to a bit of a break. And when I say a break, I don't mean a commercial break, I mean Link the VA. So without further ado, here is the Link the VA segment, Boruto edition for this week. This week's Link the VA, I'm sad to say, isn't as good as last week's Link the VA. On last week's Link the VA, if you don't know, we looked at some harem anime protagonists, well, one harem protagonist, which was Futaro from the Quintessential Quintuplets. Probably check it out if you like Futaro, because I found some amazing roles that that voice actor plays. This week, sadly, is not going to be as good, I'm sorry. If you are new here, what I do on Link the VA is pretty much I go on Mal, find a voice actor, well, the Japanese voice actors, unless maybe I want to switch it up and go for a dub actor, I might do that maybe in another episode, who knows. But I look at a voice actor and then look at the other roles that they play. And then I just have a bit of fun with it, see if the voices match and personality types and all of that. As I said, this week isn't going to be as good, I'm sorry. The first voice actor which I'll be looking at today is Kokoro Kichuki, who plays Sarada in Boruto. I didn't get much from this, I'll be honest, in terms of characters that are relevant to me and from the shows that I watch. Maybe if there are shows that you might have watched that I haven't, then it might mean a bit more to you. The one that I found the most interesting though was the fact that the Sarada voice actor or voice actress plays Boruto in Naruto the Last. What? So, Naruto the Last, at the end, has a bit of a transition between Naruto and Boruto, saying that the mantle's going to be passed on, effectively sort of reconfirming the Boruto show. I honestly don't know why this was the case. Maybe they didn't cast the Boruto voice actor yet. I honestly didn't research that. Maybe I should. But I found that a bit of a weird one. I don't really know what to say about it, but it is just a bit of a fun fact to add to the massive bag of fun facts when it comes to anime. As a result of what was slightly a dull Link the VA, I decided to look at another voice actor who appears within this arc. I didn't want to choose a voice actor that is too prominent, so I didn't want to choose Boruto or Naruto or someone like that, because I know a lot of people know about those roles, and also I wanted to make it a bit more interesting for myself as well. So therefore, I decided to look at the voice actor for Chocho. The voice actor for Chocho in the Boruto series is Ryoko Shirashi. There was one role that caught my eye. As I said, this is a bit of a duller Link the VA. There was one role that caught my eye, and that is mostly because I've been watching a lot of Monogatari recently. If you've been keeping up with the In the Moment segments, I've been watching a decent amount of Monogatari and Monogatari second season. At the moment, I'm on Hana Monogatari. I saw a role underneath this voice actor that was... I actually saw a role which comes from the Suki Phoenix arc of Monogatari, and that is Kagenui. Again, I don't really know what to say about Kagenui. She's very spiteful, let's say that. We don't really know her motives within Nisa Monogatari, although I don't want to spoil the Suki Phoenix arc and all of that for you guys. But we don't really know what she's up to. We kind of know her relationship with other characters. I do feel like the characters are quite different though. If we think of Chocho, who's probably more on the extroverted side, quite loud and very annoying in my opinion. I know the Chocho fans will hate that, but there's something I don't like about Chocho. Not particularly the voice, but the character as a whole, although I do like the voice. It's a well done voice. I don't think I even have a right to criticize the voice, to be fair. But then we compare it to Kagenui. Kagenui is a bit more on the sort of middle ground, the ambivert side. I don't really know how that completely influences the voice, as I did watch Nisa Monogatari quite a long time ago. Although I can say that I do think Kagenui is slightly on the more devious side, a side that Chocho wouldn't really get into. Kagenui, if you have seen the Monogatari series, first off comes as an enemy. I don't really know if that changes. But she's definitely not someone that you're instantly friends with, as she is on the hostile side. And with that, I don't necessarily think that Chocho and Kaginui would ever really mix. If anything, Kaginui would be an antagonist within Boruto, but knowing how Boruto is, or Boruto just being Boruto, I don't think Kaginui would ever be the perfect or a right antagonist to be in Boruto, because she's quite dark, and dark in terms of personality. Honestly, I don't really know what much else to say when it comes to Link the VA this week. I think maybe karma just took away all our fun for this Link the VA, as last week's Link the VA was amazing. But with that, let's get back to the show. Back to the Shin arc. The Shin arc has probably one of the best fights in this show so far, as well as Naruto, Sasuke, Momoshiki. I feel comfortable saying that Sakura vs. Shin has been one of, if not my favorite fights in Boruto. And with that, let's go into a bit of a fight analysis. The main battle within the Shin arc, being between Sakura and Shin, is mostly animated by Naoki Kobayashi. Mr. Kobayashi is also known for various key animations when it comes to Boruto, the movie, Kimi no Na wa, Kizu Monogatari, the OP of One Punch Man, Naruto the Last, and the list goes on. He has many, many big roles when it comes to movies and shows, mostly movies though. One thing that I really, really liked about his animation style was how he used the lines and how he approaches the fight. A key thing that I think is really important is the use of the environment within the fight, as well as how the fight actually takes place. I think that is a crucial thing that we can't really underestimate. Yeah, we can talk about, you know, power levels and all of that, but how a fight actually is executed and what you actually do in a fight is just as important as how strong the characters are and who wins it. The standout moment to me when it comes to this fight is mostly the hand-to-hand combat. I think hand-to-hand combat is super special in Naruto, particularly in the original series, and we always see it make a comeback, and when it does make a comeback, it has most of its effects or impact. It's stripped down all the ninjutsu, stripped down all the powers. How strong can our characters be on a one-on-one basis with only basic ninja tools and hand-to-hand? Mr. Kobayashi animates that very well with sort of the blurring of the hands swinging at one another. That is obviously to emphasize movement, but not every animator does that. I think the choice to do that was super impactful because it kind of just illustrates that very strength that the characters both have, and also their determination to hit each other, of course. The hands are almost the focal point of that part of the fight, or more specifically their limbs, so their legs and their hands. That is therefore made obvious by Mr. Kobayashi's animation. It also shows how dynamic that fight is, as it's those limbs that are used the most, and the rotation that Shin is using in terms of how he switches from arms to legs and flips around. It draws more attention to that. I think paying attention to sort of their arms and their legs does bring that sort of tempo to the fight. Again, I'm not an animator, so I might be speaking a bit broadly or vaguely about this. Also, just a quick side point when it comes to the sort of hand blurring or arm blurring or leg blurring is it brings out the most of the characters, and I think that is probably the most important thing in what I should have said from the beginning. You have to remember that Sakura's main ability is taijutsu. It relies on hand-to-hand combat. And then we look at Shin. Shin has a metal arm. That brings that out as well. It draws attention to the main parts of that fight rather than paying attention to jutsus, which aren't really the core of this. It's really to showcase what the two have to offer when it comes to hand-to-hand combat or limb-to-limb combat or whatever. Another thing that I heard about this, I heard about it in a tweet from like a year ago, although I recently just dug it up recently from someone else. I'll try to put those in the show notes if I can. It was that very side profile shot of the two fighting was inspired from Western movies. I think that is also a really cool part of this all. I heard that there was inspiration, or there was a parallel even, to The Winter Soldier, Captain America The Winter Soldier, that is, the Marvel movie. The fight specifically between Steve and Bucky very much does resemble that fight between Sakura and Shin. The hand-to-hand also is very quite similar, mostly because Bucky's main asset is his metal arm, and Steve without the shield is simply a soldier or a super soldier. So why not put those two together and see how they fare out? Even Bucky's knife resembles the kunai. It kind of all matches together, so I don't see why there wasn't an inspiration. And I've only heard that the animator was inspired or is inspired by Western movies. Also, I know that Japanese animators have become more and more inspired by those Western movies, not specifically just Marvel movies, but Western movies in general. So I'd love to see those come through. If I just move on slightly from hand blurring, I do love how the camera moves around and how things move closer into the camera. So again, yes, hand blurring, the punches swinging more close to the camera and coming back out. That is also marked by the camera work as well. So how the camera flips from, if you sort of think of it in your head, just gel with me here. If you remember how Sakura comes downwards, or I think it's Shin, they come down from the pillar and then that switches to the side profile. Remember, that was at an angle and then it switches almost to a 2D angle. I do love that sort of transition between the two. It kind of has this sense of depth of the environment as remember, this is kind of like an ice cavern. So using that sort of camera work kind of adds depth to the environment, as you will. So using that sort of camera angle and switching to the side profile almost seamlessly adds depth to the environment, which I'm very happy to say that I like. I think all those points just bring me back to my main point, and that is just how they use the environment. The environment, I think, is probably the best used in this fight, probably even better than Naruto, Sasuke, Momoshiki. Although, to counter that, it was more the fact that they did need to show off those sort of powers and ninjutsu, so I kind of get why that was the case. You don't want to add too much to it and make it that there is too much going on. But that is the difference with Sakura and Shin. Taijutsu is a thing. The animator compensates for that by introducing the environment and the fact that it is an ice cavern. Examples of that would mostly be Sakura's usage of the pillar or throwing the pillar right at Shin. The use of the water and running on water and all of that. Again, showing off those parts of the ice cavern makes it really interesting. There is sometimes, not always, but sometimes a tendency to just simply make a fight happen because it's in an area, or just make a fight happen within that area. But why not use the area to its advantage? Why not use a stadium to its advantage? Why not use a cave to its advantage? That kind of adds depth, and that is what I really enjoy. Kind of, as I've been talking about a lot on the show, intention. But this time not writing with intention, animating and storyboarding with intention. If we quickly go back to the thing, the environment, I do also love, so this kind of combining my first point with the second one, how the camera and all of that is used with the environment. The way Sakura bounces in and outwards from the pillar again adds depth to the cave environment, in the way that she bobs closer to the pillar, meaning closer to the camera, and then bobbing right out. That also, I think, is intentional, but also it just makes it feel more active and exciting. And who doesn't love an exciting fight? I think that is enough analysis. Again, I'm not an animator. I've only studied media and graphics, you know, in school, so bear with me. Hopefully I'm not reading too deep into it. Obviously, if you know more, feel free to chime in and correct me. We're slowly getting to the end of the show, and with that, let's go to the In The Moment segment. Quickly, if you are new, the In The Moment segment is just my little section where I just talk about what I've been reading and watching recently. This week has been kind of a good week for comics, I'll be honest. Maybe not so much for anime. I'm preparing for the fourth season. The fourth season's probably already commenced by now as I'm ahead of recording. So when you're hearing this, I'm still in September. You guys are most likely in October or something like that. I'm preparing for fourth season. You know, you've got BNHA, fourth season. You got Haruno no Sora, quite a few shows coming up that I'm excited to watch. I think Vow X Love is the monthly harem, or the seasonal harem, rather. I'm feeling okay about it, but slowly drawing to the end of the year when it comes to anime. It's been a decent year. I don't know if I can say it was amazing, but it definitely has been a decent year. I've had some fun with a few shows this year as well. also quite excited to see some shows roll over and get greater as they spill into the fall season, the final season that is fall. Comic book wise has been quite better. If you check my Twitter, I did actually do a Batman Day haul. I went to a comic book store that is Forbidden Planet, looked at quite a few things. There were a lot of things available that I wanted to get. My main steal was Batman The Dark Knight Strikes Again. Last time I was reading The Dark Knight Returns, when I say last time, I mean like a year ago, so not even when this podcast existed. And then I kind of got stuck in the middle of it. I need to go back to that so then I can read this, because I got this on sale. This isn't sponsored or anything. I got it for $4.99. That was an absolute steal, so I just had to take it. I have loads of graphic novels that I still need to read. I have Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. I have Crisis on Infinite Earths. I have had that for so long on my shelf. I read like a quarter of it and then I just stopped. I don't know why. Probably because I got a bit busy. I have some Doomsday Clock I still need to finish. I have a bit of that left on my shelf. I have to read Heroes in Crisis, actually. I don't actually have that on my shelf, but I need to get the collection going for that. And a few more things, one of them being The Dark Knight Strikes Again. So many things I need to read, so little time, but I'm ready for the grind. Also at the comic book store, I bought quite a few more things. I was considering buying Batman Damn Book 1, but I actually couldn't find it, which is kind of sad. So instead I bought Dark Knight Strikes Again. I was also going to buy Last Night on Earth Book 2. That was there, but again, with the Strikes Again stuff, I was like, why not? I'm probably never going to get this for this price ever again, so why not take it? Bought Spider-Man J.J. Abrams. I'm really stoked to read that one. I've heard some good stuff and I haven't checked the spoilers. I don't want to check the spoilers because I'm really excited for it. Hopefully it goes well. It looks really good in terms of color and art. Hopefully this is a good run for Spider-Man. I'm really, really excited for it. And finally, just to end the segment, I also got my hands on Flash Forward issue 1. I know that's kind of dumb because I haven't read Heroes in Crisis yet, but I really wanted to try this one out, mostly because of the conclusion of Flash War and the premise of Flash Forward. Introducing some more multiverse stuff, I generally get quite attracted to multiverse storylines in general. So I just thought, why not? It's $3.99, as the comic things say, because in the UK, they still keep the dollars thing on it. They don't reprint it to say pounds. $3.99, that's like slightly under £3, or slightly over even. Why not buy it? Yeah, I think that is it in terms of what I've been buying recently and what I've been watching. Hopefully I'll see you guys next time on the In The Moment segment. Hopefully I have more to say next time. The segments for this episode have been slightly dry, I'll be honest. Oh yeah, I forgot. Let's do a bit of sellout. If you do enjoy this episode today, consider leaving a review, and also subscribing on your podcast app helps me out a ton, helps get the word out there. If you know Boruto fans, you know, just tell them, watch Gen the Mecha, it's a good show. He speaks about Boruto. That will help also a ton. Thank you so much for people that do that, if you do. Two more things. GenTheMecha.home.blog is my website where I put the show notes on there. I also put the sources for the episode. So the sources I use for research, the music from the production, and finally, just the show itself. And last thing, that is my Twitter. That is Get, GETIN for in, THE, the, and MECHA, Mecha. At Getting the Mecha for your updates on the show and also just my tiny mini reviews. I talk about anime and comics on there very often. Make sure to check it out, drop a follow. It's definitely a nice place to be. I also drop audiograms and sneak peeks on there, so if you want to hear parts of the show in clips, feel free to check there as well. And with all of that, let's get back to the show. So overall, I think the Sheen arc is a good arc, I'll be honest. I think the Sheen arc brings some interesting things to the table. As I said at the beginning, it plants a seed. It plants a seed in the audience's head, being what is, one, his fixation with the past? What sort of antagonist is he? What is his true goal? We know, yes, he has some grudge against Sasuke, but why is that the case and why does he know this? And finally, why does he exist? I think that is the biggest question of this episode, or this arc. Why does Sheen exist in this world where we thought the Uchiha were gone? Probably one of the finest parts of the Sheen arc when it comes to Kishimoto's writing. Introducing a character that has so much significance, making the audience sort of do a double take. We don't really know the reason why he's a thing, but he's a thing, you know, so we kind of have to just deal with that. And hopefully it will get revealed as to what Sheen is and what his motives are. Another question that I think I should answer that I dedicated this episode to is, what does Sheen do for the rest of the show? I think I kind of already covered that. It's planting that seed, but also it's almost a hook for Kishimoto to draw upon. I don't think a writer like Kishimoto would introduce that for no reason, mainly because of the lesson I learned from Naruto Shippuden in the fact that every detail is usually quite important. That detail being dropping Madara's name in the very first episode of Naruto Shippuden. And surprise, 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 he's the endgame of the entire show. Okay, maybe not the complete endgame, but the fake endgame of the show being Madara. It seemed very much like the endgame. It was in fact intended for him to be in the endgame, but due to writing reasons, actually wasn't. I think Sheen has a similar position. Maybe he's not going to be the quote-unquote Madara of the series if we're going to use relativity, but I definitely think he will have an impact further on, and it is for us to wait and endure that out. However long that will be, I don't know. I don't know if Boruto's moving in the greatest direction, but hopefully he will become of something great. From a technical standpoint, also the Sheen arc just shows how capable the team behind Boruto is when it comes to making the moment count. That applies also very much to Naruto, Sasuke versus Momoshiki. When it matters, the team does pull through. Boruto's not really the show that has brought forward all that potential, but it definitely has a lot. And scenes like this, arcs like this, show how much potential the show has. When it matters, they pull out all the stops, they animate amazingly, they use so much detail to define what they're doing. Every moment, every frame feels relevant and important. Obviously, that doesn't stand for the entire show, but I think that is something to sort of think about. How capable really is this team? Very capable, that is. But then we question, why hasn't the show moved to a greater direction? That is also something that I'm thinking about. And yes, visuals aren't particularly a key or get out of jail free card for good story. And yes, I do not necessarily mean that good visuals are get out of jail free card for a great story or grandiose narrative, but the Sheen arc is quite a good narrative. Same I'd probably go for when it comes to the versus Momoshiki arc. I would say it's decently written. Why hasn't that applied to the rest of the show? I don't know. Most of the episode today has been me saying I don't know, but I think that is also a thing with Boruto and a thing with the Sheen arc. We don't really know why this is happening, but it happens anyway and we kind of just have to deal with it. And to answer the final question which I put forward at the very beginning of the episode, and that is, how successful is the Sheen arc? I would say yes, it's successful. To what extent? Quite successful. The enigma that is Sheen does bring forward a really nice vibe for this arc, as it feels fresh that we're not fighting someone that we kind of know. Although it is someone within the loop, it's not a completely fresh character, and yeah, we haven't seen Sheen before, but definitely someone that has some relevance to previous plot lines. He's kind of tied into the new age that is Boruto, but definitely has his roots set back in Naruto Shippuden. That link, but also the fact that he's fresh and new, kind of brings a nice take to this arc. Also the fact that Sakura's in it is a good thing. The Sakura is weak memes can finally end, although they haven't ended. Sakura's actually in Boruto. Sakura wasn't really in Naruto at all. I do argue that Sakura was in Naruto Shippuden, but Sakura's actually in Boruto. She actually did something good. So I think that is some great credit. To sort of wrap up today's episode, I am a fan of the Sheen arc. Does this add too much to the show? Kind of. Although the content of the Sheen arc hasn't particularly been built upon, I feel like I can confidently say that it has definitely proven what the show is capable of, and with that, I'm very proud. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Guest in the Mecha podcast. That has been episode 14. This arc has been a bit of a tricky one to analyze, mostly because it does feel like a standalone piece. But regardless, hopefully you did enjoy the episode. Again, if you did get value from it, consider leaving a review and subscribing. I've said that like 3 times today. Next week, I'll be going forward in our Dark Knight's Metal Analysis journey, looking at the casting. And also on that note, just to say, I did get a copy of The Batman Who Laughs issue 1, so maybe I will add that to sort of our look through Dark Knight's Metal. Anyway, have a great week guys, have a good one. Hopefully I'll see you in the next one where we'll be talking about the casting, and then maybe go on to something else further on. I'm not too sure, I haven't really planned that out yet. But have a great one guys, and I will see you hopefully in the next one. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows. Difference by Chasers Gaming, Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Chipscape by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org,